if you go down a certain path, like, it's, you know, it's going to be a challenge. Whatever you do, nothing will come easy for you. Like, you have to go through the stages to get where you want to, you know, go. Like, you know, I decided to become an animator, but I know the path wasn't going to be easy.
You're listening to the Ink and Paint Girls podcast, a look at animation through the women who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday, and this week is all about the animators of the inspiring documentary about rapper, producer, PhD candidate Inongo Lumumba Kasongo, also known as Samus, which is currently crowdfunding on Indiegogo. With 12 minutes of hand-drawn animation, I just had to have these talented animators on the show. Today's guest is 2D animator Leah Coleman. Welcome to the show, Leah. It's great to have you on.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Of course. So I always pimp the guests out to introduce themselves in greater length, like just who you are, what you do, and any career highlights or things you're proud of so far.
I am currently a graduate student at The Ohio State University. My major actually is animation. I'm also a teaching assistant there for work. So that's what I've been doing currently for the past 2.5 years. My career right now is working on the documentary of Inongo, as well as just working on my thesis project currently. Some highlight things, I guess, that I'm proud of is actually just starting becoming an animator about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, finally taking that step and saying, like, this is what I want to do. And, you know, taking the time to get to know myself and know what type of animation I like and what type of animation I like to do. So yeah, I guess those are the things I'm most proud of.
Very nice. 7 years is a long time. Like, I'm wondering what propelled you to go back to school?
So there's actually a lot of things that kind of drove me to go back to school. So for one, the school I went to for undergrad, which was Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, they actually weren't developed in their animation or even just like their 3D aspects yet. Like, they started doing like interactive media probably around like my junior year in college, but there's only two classes that had animation. And I actually went to that school for track, so I was an athlete. I was a student athlete, like, both time, like, you know, for all those years I was there. But, yeah, I only took 2 animation classes, and I just kind of taught myself the past 7 years how to animate until I got to grad school. And, you know, I learned so much in the past 2 years than I probably ever learned when I was out of school. I decided to go back to school was because, like, you know, I didn't know, honestly, what animation was. You know, I could, you know, probably give you like my own ideas of what animation was back then, but I didn't know like the actual definition of what an animator was. You know, I just know I enjoyed doing it. And so, first of all, I got rejected from the school, I think the year before I got into university. But yeah, I know I wanted to just learn more about animation, and then I wanted to gain more connections in the industry just to understand, you know, like, what is it like to work in animation, and, you know, what are all the things I have to do to become a better animator to help others push themselves through all this. So yeah.
Very cool. I feel like that's so common where, you know, you might go to a school that isn't actually like prepped to teach you what you need to do the job correctly, especially something like animation. Like, there used to not be so many programs, and all of a sudden, like, everyone has a program. So it's good that you're, you know, getting your foundation really solid.
Exactly.
So in regards to the Inongo documentary, I'm wondering what, how did Inongo and her work connect with you? Like, why did you feel like it was important to contribute to this project?
So the first time I actually saw the trailer for the documentary, I just watched it, and then I listened to her music, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is kind of like me. Like, you know, I'm going through these struggles of, you know, just personal life, as well as, you know, trying to be a student and trying to balance out my social life, as well as, you know, all these other things. You know, I'm not a rapper or anything, but, you know, I'm trying to be a student, but, you know, I'm also trying to still do athletic stuff, even though, like, you know, I'm not in track anymore. I'm still trying to do that and also balance schoolwork, and then also trying to balance my social life. And then, you know, hearing from her personally, I actually had a chance to talk with her earlier this year in person, and just a lot of her struggles were very similar to mine, and I just felt that connection that I know that she was able to portray in her music and everything. So it's not even just me that relates to her. It's just other women, not even just Black women, just women in general who are able to relate to her on certain levels, such as like health issues and just being a student and also trying to balance other things in life. So
that's awesome. It sounds like I'm like sensing a connection too, where she not only makes the music for herself, but for others to connect with it that way. And you had mentioned a few minutes ago that that's what you want to do with your animation.
Yes.
Kind of going into your origin story, when was the moment that you realized you wanted to be a storyteller?
Oh man, honestly, I feel like that goes back like way back, like way when I was a kid. Like, I always knew I liked to draw. I just didn't know how I would work into becoming an animator, I guess. But I knew I wanted to tell a story somehow. So, you know, I would literally draw every day and stuff. And I think I just realized that how my life was, I kind of wanted to reflect that a little bit in my drawings. And then when I found that I could actually have my drawings move, I was like, oh, then I can tell my story in this way instead of just creating these illustrations. And it just kind of worked that way. So like now, you know, like my goal is to, you know, express that things that a lot of people think but can't really say because they're either too afraid or they just, like myself, don't have as much confidence in themselves as, you know, other people think that we do.
When you feel fear or judgment, like, what do you do to get over that? Just on a personal note.
I guess nowadays what I do is just I try to remind myself that no matter how much I think other people are better than me in certain things, I'm not on their time. Like, I'm, like, my life is my own time, and I have to remember that like how my drawings are, how my animations are, they are where they're supposed to be. Because this is where I'm supposed to be right now. Like, I'm not supposed to be where, like, some 19-year-old who looks like a prodigy while animating. I'm not them. So I always have to remind myself, like, if I get upset or if I feel like I'm comparing myself or I feel that fear of just, you know, not being good enough, I always remind myself I'm on my own time. It's okay. Like, it's okay to be right here.
That's very cool. You're on Leah time.
Yes, I am on Leah time.
With Inongo, there's over 10 minutes, about 12 minutes of hand-drawn animation used to illustrate anecdotes and experiences from Inongo's life. And all the sequences are split among you and five other animators. And the animation style embraces the tradition of hand-drawn pencil tests. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there's anything you can say about your sequence that you're working on.
So Kevin, our director, he actually challenged me to kind of push towards kind of the style of Dan Haskett, who was like the head supervisor of the animations and such. And so like looking at a lot of his work, you know, I kind of wanted to capture that feeling because watching him, it kind of reminded me of another like animator that I really admire, and that's Glenn Keane, and how they have their drawings or like even just like the pencil lines are just well in movement. Like, it looks like the drawings are moving even if they're not animated. And so I wanted to, you know, kind of reflect that in my animations in some ways, but still keep it me. Like, it's not Dan or it's not Glenn, it's me. And so with my animations, I really wanted to focus on like the movement of the characters, and that's one of my things that I'm even doing in my own work, is really focusing on how I can incorporate Anango, how can I incorporate her thoughts through the movements of the animation that I'm doing, like the sequence part. So for example, the scene where it's kind of like a flashback of her being a kid, and she's drawing on the ground, and she's like showing her parents this drawing that she made. And like during that scene, it's so simple, but you're like capturing that little moment of like her being a kid and really being immersed in that drawing and really being excited of, you know, showing this to, you know, her parents. Because when I was a kid, like, I know that's how I was. Like, I would draw something and I look back at those drawings like, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? But I was a kid, you look, you know, you're drawing these things, you don't think anything of it. You're just so immersed in that moment. And I really wanted to capture that. Like, even though I don't, you know, I didn't know Anango back then, I could imagine like how she was, especially how she talked in the overview part of, you know, the documentary. But I just really wanted to capture that moment of her, like, you know, this is what she kind of wanted to do before, you know, wanting to be a rapper. So capturing that moment, that's something that I always wanted to do as an animator, as an artist, is just capture a person through the, you know, the fluidity of the animation. So, you know, that's what I tried to do in my sequence.
When you're kind of like looking back into your childhood to kind of make these connections, you know, like some people can't remember their childhoods clearly. Like, do you have like a meditation to get back into into your own memories?
I think even talking about my memories right now, I can remember there. My dad, he would always talk about how I would always have a sketchbook with me, like all the time. And thinking about it now, I'm like, did I really? And then I'm like really thinking like, oh my gosh, I really did have a sketchbook with me like at all times. and then I think about like those times where I would just literally sit in the kitchen table and just draw all day. Like, there would not be a time I don't remember I didn't draw something. And I would always get excited with all my drawings, like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to finish this. I need to finish this. I need to, you know, show this to everyone. And I just got so excited. And I felt that I wanted to incorporate that, you know, in that sequence, because it's like, I know how she felt. Like, that's literally me. Like, I'm literally that little girl in some way, because like, I was just as excited to show my parents. And if my parents put like a thumbs up, like, oh, that's nice, I'm like, really? I put in like hours of work, and all you say is, oh, that's nice. Like, no, that's not the reaction we want. We want you to say, oh my gosh, like, that's so good. Like, that's what we want. We don't want it. That's nice. Like, we get that with everyone else. Parents are so much more important. So the reaction we want is like high praise.
Fast forward to today. Do you still share your work pretty actively? Like, do you do social media and everything?
Oh yeah, for sure. I show it like all the time. Sometimes I'll get a little nervous, because I'll like look at them like, this is incomplete, or and this is where the comparison thing. This is where I have to like tell myself, Leah, don't compare, don't do that, because like I always get nervous on showing my stuff because I follow so many animators, and I'll like look at their work and I'm like, oh gosh, their stuff is so good, and I'm like, no. I am doing good right now. I'm making progress. This is all progress work. It's all right. But yeah, I do. I show it on social media. I still show it to my parents like all the time.
I'd love to talk more about your creative philosophies. It seems that you do a lot of thinking about this kind of thing. Can you explain to me that, like, right before you go into animate a scene, like, how do you break down a scene?
That's actually going to be part of my thesis too. So I guess I can talk a little bit about that. So for me, how I do it is that for example, when I met Anango in person and watched her perform, I would literally just watch her movements. You know, I would watch her facial expressions. I would watch how she would do certain things. Even when we were talking next to each other, I observed her there. So it was just kind of thinking about not just only how she speaks and stuff, but how she reacts to certain things. You know, there was a part where it was actually at the beginning of her performance. She seemed nervous when she was performing because, you know, I didn't know she had a lot of fans in the crowd and stuff. But like, as soon as me and, you know, another fan started yelling and stuff, she started smiling and then other people started joining in. And then she really got into her character. And so, you know, watching her from this like kind of shyness to like this person that, you know, I saw like, you know, in the videos and stuff like that, I was like, okay, now I understand that, you know, how she is, you know, through her movements and stuff. So trying to incorporate that through the animation. So I would, you know, I would always have like a little archive in my mind of just movements, just from like, you know, random people in the streets or just like my friends and family. So I would think about that first and then also think about, okay, like what am I trying to draw first? Okay, like what am I trying to incorporate within this sequence or whatever. So with her, it was like trying to talk about like her being on stage and then kind of how she is in relation to her parents and then in her relation to, you know, her now husband. So just thinking about all of those things. But like, I guess in terms of observation wise, I kind of blur out certain parts of a person. So if I want to focus on arms, I'll literally blur out the rest of the body and then just like look at someone's arms and look how they function and stuff, like whatever they're doing. So if someone's running, I look at how the arm muscles move and stuff like that. So those type of things kind of help me prepare for an animation. And then I'll sometimes run some tests. So I'll do like really quick animation test to see like, okay, does this work? Is there weight added to it? Is this even show how they are? Like, does this give any personality and things like that? So I'll do multiple things before I even actually do an animation.
That's cool. Yeah, because you can animate movement, but also you need to put the personality of what you're trying to capture as well.
Correct.
I'm wondering, like, because you had mentioned putting like your own thumbprint on top of Dan Haskett's designs, but Kevin, the director and producer, like challenging you to keep some of that movement and some of his lines alive in it still. I'm not sure how to say that, but I mean, that's quite a huge ask.
Yeah.
I mean, his drawings are insane.
Well, I'm glad that he asked that because my thing is, you know, in order to progress on anything, you have to accept the challenge. You do. And so when he asked me to challenge myself in that, I was like, yeah, I'll do it because if this is going to help me become a better animator and to gain that experience so I can tell someone else what it's like, then yeah, so be it.
Yeah, very true. Did you ever find out what drew the director to your work?
He told me that he liked this one animation I did, which was actually based on Glenn King's duet and Ryan Woodward's Thought of You. And so it was like, it was a dance animation and it was just basically to let myself loose because I have a tendency to just restrict myself to just the body in general, just to draw an actual, you know, anatomically correct body in animation. But, you know, with animation, you can skew anything, you can change anything, you know, it depends on the person. But, like, I just have a tendency to restrict myself to just one form. And so this was a chance for me to really loosen up and really take myself to a new level on like, you know, how the body works, how the body moves in animation, what can you do, but still kind of keep the form in, but not restrict myself from like doing other things. So he liked that animation and found it was really interesting. And I think that's why he challenged me to kind of keep that same feeling that Dan Haskett has in his animations. Mm.
I remember watching that and being like, whoa.
Right?
Like, sheesh. Because you pushed it so, so hard, too. Like, it's different than what they did. And I love the motion lines. Like, All I can say is you push it so hard, and I know that doesn't really explain anything to the audience. So I'll put the link in the show notes so everyone can check it out. It's basically like an animated master copy, but mashup at the same time, infused with more of what you want to see and like challenge yourself to do. It's a really cool exercise.
It was. It was a serious challenge. Like, my professor, she really pushed me for this one.
Very cool. Let's talk about time management now. So how do you manage your time? You had mentioned social schedule and life earlier. Like, how do you keep yourself happy?
Oh, man. How do I keep myself happy? I know that during the week, for the most part, it's very hard to animate during the week because I have, like, how many classes do I have? I have, like, 3 or 4 classes. And so, for my thesis, I honestly can't really animate until the weekend. So I guess how I manage my time is, like, try to get most of my homework from school done during the week and then animate during the weekend and then... Like, I guess social-wise, I don't really have as much of a social life, but I can. Mm-hmm. I just choose to focus more on school just because, you know, thesis deadline is coming up as well as, like, the documentary deadline, and so I want to stay focused on that. So I guess, like, things that I do in order to help me kind of not freak out every time is, I guess, go to the gym at least for an hour, hour and a half. Every day. And then I have yoga, which is actually one of my classes I take for school. And yeah, so I just do those things to help me kind of de-stress. Yeah, but that's how I try to manage myself for now.
It's awesome that you're still staying very active, even though you're not running track anymore. Do you have any thoughts on like breaking down a project into manageable milestones?
Well, for one, it's staying motivated. That's like the first thing. And that's something that I'm working on too, is staying motivated. And this goes for like anything I do, because for some reason I'm constantly tired. Like, I'm always tired. That is just an issue. I still can't figure out how to work out, but it makes me unmotivated quite a bit. So I guess it's just for the milestone stuff, I guess. It's like before it even starts, is even like talking about, okay, like, what are you capable of doing? Like, how, like, knowing yourself, I guess. So for me, I actually am becoming quicker in animating and stuff. Like, I used to be kind of slow, but now I'm getting a lot faster. But it's just knowing, like, how much can you actually take? And, like, especially like for a project. So for like this project, I know I could take it on because it kind of relates to a little bit to my thesis, and it's helping me progress on my thesis. So it's just like understanding that aspect, just like how much can you hold? So, if, you know, someone's having like 2 projects at the same time. Do you think that's too much or is it not enough? But if it's too much, then, you know, I guess it's like trying to balance out, okay, like which one comes first, like what deadline comes first. So it's figuring out, you know, what's due first. So for me, the documentary is due first. So I'm going to put a little bit more effort in the documentary. And then my thesis is second. And then just talking about, okay, like what scenes are going to be the toughest to do. So I know at the beginning, before we actually started animating, we talked about what places would take the longest or what places would have more fluid animation in comparison to some of the other scenes. So what I would do is I would focus on mostly on those scenes first and then start building in this other scenes that had less fluidity in the animation. So I guess like in terms of dates, normally it would be about 6 months, because the last animation I did that was similar to this, it took me 6 months to do. But since school started, I have to, like, think about now, like, okay, now I have to expand that a little bit more because it's taking me a lot longer since school started. I guess it's like saying, okay, now how many hours can I put in each week for the animation? So for me, I can normally put in about close to 10 hours a week for the documentary. because of school. So,
and kind of like knowing all of this and knowing yourself and your schedule goes into self-care as well. Like, you know how much you can take, like you were saying, like what's too much and too little. Mm-hmm. Along with that, like, do you have any other self-care habits?
I try to eat healthy. So because I actually have like a stomach problem that I was diagnosed with like 3 years ago. So on top of that, I also have to think about like what I eat. So like, you know, if I'm, you know, at school or something late at night, I can't eat junk food. Like I'm not allowed to eat junk food because I'll get a flare up in my stomach and it'll start hurting. And then all of that just runs loose. And so I always have to think about like, okay, what can I eat and stuff, or what should I eat? So it's always like preparing myself, always like food prepping, and everything, or bringing fruit with me if I'm super, you know, if I'm really hungry, but I don't have food at the moment. So, you know, always thinking ahead. So I'll always think about that for self-care. And then I try to, if I can, get out of the house. So I did that today because I couldn't focus. So I went out and went on a walk, and I try to immerse myself in nature a little bit. So that's another way of self-care that I do sometimes. So yeah. And then I'm going to try to go swimming again, if that's possible, which is another way of self-care. So I try to do all those things because I have a lot of health issues. So it's, I guess it's just like thinking about all that and not stressing myself out, because stress also kind of adds on to the health issues and makes things worse. So, yeah.
There's a lot on your plate to take care of.
Yeah.
That has to be very difficult to stay on top of. But at least you're realistic, you know, and you understand what you have to do in order to do this thing you love, and you just take care of it.
Exactly. Well, if you think about it, if you actually did the stuff I was doing, it's not as bad as you think it is. It's just, I think it's become such a motor skill now that it doesn't seem that much to me.
That's good. So we're to the part of the episode, we're nearing the end, by the way. We're to the part of the episode where we talk about representation. Can you speak into why it's important to you, if it is true to your process?
When I was younger, I didn't think anything of it. I really didn't. I literally didn't know there was not that many people of color in the animation industry. You know, I just thought, oh, I'm going to get in the animation industry and it'll just be so much fun. And then I, you know, got older and I was like, you know, I found out the truth that, you know, we're still the minority in a lot of things. And I know I'm seeing a lot more people of color in the animation industry, but it's all men. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so seeing like this, like this documentary having like just black women, that was literally a feat in itself. Like, oh my gosh, I've never even seen this many black women in like one thing ever, you know? And that's, it's like great, but at the same time, it's sad because, you know, we're out there, you know, women animators are out there. And actually I did a paper on that like last year, where I was talking about women animators and stuff, but I was looking up women animators and I did not see one black animator, like not one. And I was thinking to myself, like, where are they? Like, I know they exist, but why aren't they being shown? And that kind of made me feel some type of way, because it's like, now it's like, okay, well, we can offer just as much good animation as the other person, but we're being so underlooked because we're of color. And so like one of my goals in life is honestly to prove that, you know, you can be any color and still be a good animator. It doesn't matter what color you are. It matters, like, you know, what you're able to offer, and what, if you're able to like inspire others to become better people or just become better animators in general. Like, it's, like, it just shouldn't be an issue. It never should have been an issue, but of course it is. But yeah, it means so much to me because, you know, there's not many of us that are being seen, and I want us to be seen just as much as the other person.
A couple times I've heard people say that the job should go to the person who's best for the job, and usually that's someone with more experience who's already been working for a while, who knows someone who is usually male and white. But, like, I'm wondering, what would you say to this person?
Honestly, and that's my thing, is, like, how can you gain experience if they won't let you have the experience? It just, you know, I get it. But at the same time, it's like, how can people gain experience if you're not willing to give that person the chance? So I just feel like that, you know, that question is, it can be in some ways ambiguous, because it just, you know, what if that person doesn't have experience, but they are probably a better animator than the one who has probably 10 years of experience, you know? It's just the fact that they probably learned on their own, but they just didn't, you know, they're just so underlooked because, you know, they aren't that white male that stands out, that, you know, stands in the crowd, but, you know, we stand out. It just doesn't make sense to me.
So who's one of your favorite characters? And it could be out of anything. It doesn't have to be movies or animation. It could be books as well.
I guess. So it's actually, like, my favorite book as well as my favorite film, but Scout from To Kill a Mockingbird, as well as the film. And this is because, you know, during that time, it was during the time of, you know, Jim Crow laws and stuff. But, you know, she was raised to kind of not discriminate against others based upon, you know, race as well as just other things. As we learn, you know, throughout the book, if you've ever read To Kill a Mockingbird. But she has this, like, innocence to her. But she also has, like, this thing where she questions life and questions the ideas of, you know, the time she lived in. And I felt that was really an interesting idea that I'm really happy that Harper Lee actually looked into, because, you know, I think with every child, you know, we grow up questioning these things because, you know, our minds are so open that, you know, people don't realize that how we are as individuals as we grow up are based, you know, kind of upon our experiences growing up, like, you know, where we live and who we grow up with and how our parents raise us. And so I felt that was, like, an interesting thing, or she, you know, she was a good character in the book. And I feel like I relate to her on some levels because, like, for me, like, I still question things, like, even though, like, I was raised a certain way, you know, and my parents gave me a choice to kind of look at the world in a way that a lot of people don't look. And so I really appreciate her character, and yeah.
That's very cool. I'm wondering, because, you know, she came out with that second book in recent years, because I haven't looked this up or anything, but what do you think took her so long to do a follow-up novel?
I don't know, actually. I actually don't know. I'm actually not entirely sure why she did that. I mean, either because, well, for one, I know that her book was banned from some places.
Oh, right.
But I think maybe that could be another reason, is because, like, now, you know, people are starting to accept certain things. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So, you know, for example, like, Uncle Tom's Cabin, you know, that was banned from, like, most schools. But, like, you know, I think it's being brought back because people are starting to learn, like, you know, these things happened and need to be discussed. That could be a reason.
Yeah, because I remember when I was in school, it was mandatory reading
to read it. It was mandatory reading for me, too.
Yeah. It's been a while. I need to reread it. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to take in.
Right, exactly.
Who's a artist or writer or creator that you look up to?
Let me think. Women-wise, I guess I really, you know, this is actually the saddest part, right? Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, when I think of, like, artists and stuff like that, it's a lot of males that come up. And actually, I can't remember her name at the moment, but she was actually the creator of a series called Full Metal Alchemist.
I know who this is, but I cannot remember her name because I can't pronounce it.
I know. Oh, okay. She went through a male pen name. But her male pen name is Hiromu Arakawa. Arakawa, yes.
Right, because her actual name is Hiromi.
Yes.
Yeah. And why does her work connect with you so much?
Actually, her... so the Full Metal Alchemist franchise itself has been just a huge influence on me, just because, like, they really focus on not just, like, these two male characters, but they focus on just their relationship with the world, them questioning, you know, things that are supposed to be absolute, and they challenge the people they meet. They challenge them to question, you know, their beliefs as well as, you know, the world around them. And I felt like that story really resonated with me in my personal work, as well as, like, the style of her work. Oh, I love it so much. Like, it's so well done, as well as, you know, just the character development, everything. I just found it just so inspiring, because literally, like, my style is kind of is based more on the anime part of it, but, like, the story kind of is a little reflected in my own story a little bit. Like, with my characters, it revolves around, like, this family, but all the other characters all are in question too about, you know, their roles within the story, as well as kind of understanding, like, the character development between, you know, the main characters and the side characters, and just, like, also in terms of, you know, reality, in terms of, like, politics and religion, and things like that. And I felt like I really should put that in my work as well. So, yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, it's amazing when we look at the things we love and see, when you really investigate it, like, what is the piece of it that you want to take into your own voice?
So, exactly.
So we're at the end of the episode. Do you have any advice for people, or, you know, women seeking to get into this profession?
Yeah. Well, for one, like I think I said it earlier, you know, if you decide to take this path, you know, it will be a difficult path. Like, it's not, well, it depending on you, you know, it could be easy, it could be hard, but, you know, for if you're literally just learning to become an animator and stuff, yeah, it's going to be a challenge for you. And I think you should take that challenge on, but don't ever give up. Like, you know, dedicate yourself to it. Like, if this is what you want, then it's going to take dedication and discipline, but also, you know, remembering that it's not just a job, you know, this is a passion that you want. And I feel like in some industries today, people see it as a job rather than a passion. So just remembering to have fun with it and to never give up on your dreams. Like, I know a lot of people say that, but it really is true. And then, you know, also just remind yourself that you're on your own time, that, you know, not to compare yourself with other artists, because, you know, other artists are there to cheer you on, not to bring you down. And I've learned that, you know, I was able to meet so many different animators from different companies, like, even, like, overseas, and they all encouraged me, even though they're, like, so amazing. And I felt like just this small speck, you know, they gave me hope. And that's one thing, is, like, always keep that hope in mind that you will get to where you need to be. It'll just take time.
Well said. So what's next for Leah Coleman?
First is graduating and passing my master's. So that is what's next for Leah. And then hopefully I get a job and, you know, learn all I need to learn in the industry, and then hopefully eventually make my own company and inspire others to, you know, pursue their dreams and to not give up, because it really is hard, but at the same time, it'll be so worth it.
So where can our audience find you online?
You can find me online on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter. I'm mostly on Instagram. My Instagram name is LEAC15. Or you can find me, actually, you can find me on DeviantArt too. Tumblr or DeviantArt. My pen name is Karish in Love, Carishinlove. So, yeah.
thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This has been wonderful.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider leaving a review. It helps us reach and share these stories with a wider audience. Want to chat? We're on Twitter, Instagram, and can be found at inkandpaintgirls.com. Special thanks to our guest, Leah, and the Anango team. This episode of the Ink and Paint Girls podcast was produced by Cassie Soliday in sunny Burbank, California. Music composed by Grace Tsai and TV's Kyle. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent those of our respective employers.
Until next time, this has been the Ink and Paint Girls podcast. Stay colorful!